Okay, we're ready to start the show as far as the questions and answers and the roundtable give and take. Courtney, do you remember what Russell brought up you thought was interesting about 30 minutes ago? Probably not.
It was why science hasn't accepted this. Why mainstream science doesn't accept the case for Psi.
Let's keep that around on the panel here.
And actually, I already commented on that, and Lynn already commented on that.
Well, yeah.
But go ahead. Yeah, but that was...
Some conspiratorial-minded people have said, and I wouldn't say that I subscribe to this, but some would say that those in control of things don't want us to know the truth about ourselves, and they're the people that fund scientific research. I've been a medical reporter for many years, and I learned about simple things like nutrition, and I realized that this is rarely studied in scientific in a scientific setting, because the funding is provided by the drug companies. So they're going to look at drug research, not nutritional research.
That's a good illustration.
Who controls the scientific funding? And yeah, it's a paradigm. It's a paradigm shift. A lot of castles will crumble when they admit remote viewing is real.
I would like to add that since I work at the university, I get to look at these people in the face. And it really is a very deep gap between what they are doing and what they would have to acknowledge if they accepted the reality of remote viewing. These people really don't want to discuss it. They really do block it out. Because you'd have to really say, with all of the research that's been done over the decades, even early research that was done in the early labs at PAIR and SRI International, that was enough to demonstrate the reality of remote viewing. But if you add what's happened since then, it's way overkill. So you really have to look at who these people are. I understand the conspiratorial component to it, and there may be something to it on the level of governmental operations. But on the level of the academy, on the level of the university, I don't think the government's involved in that. It really is a psychological issue on the level of the academics themselves.
Okay, let's go to the phones. We got a lot of people been holding on for a while. Caller, are you there? 937.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, what do you have to say? Do you have a question for these scholarly people?
This is Teresa Frisch here. I'm well known to the panel, most of them. Russell may know me if he thinks about it. Hi, everybody. You're doing a great job.
Hi, good evening.
Hi. I am a student of Lynn's, and I'm also a graduate of his analyst program, and so I was possibly thinking that I could dialogue with Russell about controlled remote viewers methodology and how, and reassure him how you people know what you are getting is accurate. And Courtney's project, he becomes a little passionate when he talks about it. Dick did an excellent job explaining how in that project the viewers turned their sessions in well in advance of the tasking and the target being chosen. Russell's concern was, how do you know that they were accurate? Courtney has actually been working with the Hawaii group and Lynn's group over several projects, and as an analyst, I can say you have to know your viewers. They turn in several sessions and establish clarity scores. So you know when you have actual hands-on feedback to compare their scores.
Can you tell us what a clarity score is? What does that mean?
That's what I would term a baseline score. A clarity score is what Courtney terms it. You establish someone's accuracy by comparing their remote viewing session results against known feedback.
So that's and not a double-blind experiment.
Russell, it is. It goes beyond double-blind. The power doesn't even exist at the time that the viewers are doing their sessions. What you're talking about now is the clarity score is simply a scaling method. It's a summary scaling method that's explained in the article and so on. Russell, I'm not attacking your stuff. What is the big issue with you attacking every little thing that's going on here? So if we're trying to explain what's going on, we're just trying to explain how we do it and the advances that we've made with respect to remote viewing. Everyone's respecting the stuff that you did.
Can I answer Russell's question?
Yeah, let me stop.
Russell, what is your question? You want to know how, if they're double blind?
It looks like if the target is a hurricane, then you evaluate what the guy says against the hurricane target.
Okay, Russell.
Is that correct?
Number one, the coordinates were sent to the viewers.
Back at Courtney's place has what you say. How do they determine how you did?
If those viewers turned in their sessions today and you didn't have a target chosen until 2 months from now to compare that to, that's double blind.
Yes, indeed.
All right, so that was your first question. That was your first question. You asked how could that be double blind?
Okay.
So if there was no knowledge of the target.
I've got Courtney's paper in front of me, but in the interest of the goals of this program, I propose to just table this, and I'll chat with Courtney offline another day.
Good idea.
Okay.
That's a good idea. But you're also confusing two different methods of double blind. You're talking about tasking double blind versus judging blind. And so what Teresa's talking about
is...
Yeah, and what Teresa was talking about is the tasking. So you were at cross purposes. But again, let's just...
That's why I proposed to drop it.
This
is Dick. I'll put this in a new direction, and I'll ask this to Teresa and Lauren. And all of us, what proof? There's no proof when you're watching someone else do it. The ultimate proof is doing it yourself. You're never going to believe this until you actually do it. Don't you ladies agree that is the ultimate thing? When you do it yourself, when you produce the data and you see the feedback, that's the wow moment. And you're not really going to believe it until you do it yourself.
Well, you think, Lauren?
Lauren, can you address what do you think about site contact versus two pictures in an envelope, just to compare if you got, you know, the bridge versus the waterfall, or the bridge versus, you know, whatever? I mean, site contact, when you realize that you've had site contact, it's spectacular. You have no idea. You look at that black and white session in your hands. And
well,
it matches.
Absolutely. But going back to Dick's point, I don't think that we're talking about science and why is science being sort of a hindrance to going forward with remote viewing. And as a viewer and as somebody who's only a viewer, I'm not interested in how long science takes to catch up with us. I just want to keep viewing. And so that's my big thing. I'm not even interested in debating why science is lagging behind. I just want to keep viewing. So that's kind of where I come from. It's kind of a moot point to me.
Behind question pertains to our understanding of what it does. I'm getting pretty old now, and my hope is that one day we'll understand how psychic ability works. That is, we're able to look into the distance and look into the future quite accurately, and the fact that we can see the future indicates that we don't understand causality, which from a physicist's point of view is quite a serious thing not to understand. And we're not going to attract smart people to try and figure this out unless we have convincing data or acceptance from the general public.
Russell brought up something interesting I want to ask everybody.
Yeah, if I could disagree there for just one moment. The understanding of the automobile and the invention of the automobile was not what changed our society. It was the acceptance of the automobile, and that acceptance came about because those people who bought automobiles when there weren't even roads or filling stations and started helping their neighbors get to the hospital and started helping their neighbors, that's what got it accepted. And how many lifetimes did we use electricity before we finally understood what it was? And it wasn't the understanding of what it was that got it accepted. It was the use of it. And like Lauren says, if the people who want to know what it is and how it works and so forth can't accept it, it's not because, you know, it's not because the thing is not real. What's going to get it accepted is getting out and actually using it to help businesses make money, help gamblers make money, help archaeologists by saying, hey, dig here and you'll find something, and by going to the police and saying, here's how to find the criminal and here's how to find the missing person. And it's the use of it that's going to get accepted, not the proof of it.
Lynn,
I agree with your principle that if people use this with great accuracy and reliability, it would have great acceptance. But in remote viewing that I've seen, the accuracy can be spectacularly rewarding, but the reliability has a lot to be wished for. So
that's,
I think,
Russell,
that until we
that's
get
what
the
I
accurate,
was trying to talk to you about, Russell. I'm sorry, this is Teresa. That's exactly what I was trying to point out about Courtney's site. He has more than one project there with multiple viewer sessions, with multiple accuracy scores, and you can see their accuracy ratings. They're really very, very good, both Hawaii and Lynn's group.
Let's see, we've got a technical argument about Courtney, and I would like to drop it.
That's where the sessions are housed, if you would like to look at
I
that.
I have it in front of me. I have his paper in front of me. It may
it's
me
not the
under,
paper. It's his site. It's his
okay.
site.
Okay,
caller. Thanks a lot. We've got to move on to the callers.
My bigger point here is that Democritus understood electricity at the time of the Greeks, and people did little things with electricity and got absolutely nowhere applying it until Maxwell wrote his equations, and then we were all able to use it. You could generate little arcs and sparks for 2,000 years after Democritus, and that was pretty entertaining, but until we knew how it was used, it did not get into thousands of homes.
Good point, Russell. You mentioned something about remote viewing in the future. Do we all five remote viewers here agree that remote viewers can see into the future?
Yeah, yes. Courtney proved that in that study. Yeah, we've done it at the Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild. We have a number of notarized predictions that we've done on our site. We've done it a few times. It's published.
Can you see everything in the future that you target?
Can I speak to that? You can see the future as it stands now. There's a thing called paradoxical tasking that if I say, well, this happened once right after 9/11, I was contacted to predict where and when the next terrorist event would be. I told them it was going to be on the East Coast. It was going to be a water landing and so on, and told them where and when, and it actually happened, but the people were there to stop it. Therefore, the event that I predicted never happened because the future was changed. And does this mean alternate universes? I don't think so. It means that there is paradoxical tasking in that, you take actions to change the future, then the remote viewer is going to be wrong. And in a case like that, I was very happy to be wrong because it stopped a terrorist attack.
How about affecting the past? That's something that we are currently working on at Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild, is to determine whether a viewer can move. Some believe that remote viewing is just a passive act.
Yeah.
You're just passively, that information only moves one direction. The question is, can it move two directions?
We did a 4-year study showing that you can absolutely influence the past, yes. Uh-huh.
Now, how does that work?
The data from many labs show that the accuracy of precognition is exactly equal to the accuracy of contemporaneous remote viewing. The people at Princeton did 500 trials showing that. Our work at SRI showed that in formal studies, it's just as easy to forecast changes in the silver a week in advance as it is to describe a picture in an envelope.
Sure.
And we did the picture.
Oh, how come all you guys aren't on the stock market getting rich?
Who says we're not? Yeah,
I just have a lot of trouble with. I accept what Lynn says about the event never happened because he saw what could happen. I don't want to be the Mr. Skeptic here, but isn't when you take all kinds of evidence of events around you and you compute it in your own mind, don't you come up with logical conclusions? How do you know you're remote viewing? Do you see it, or you hear it, you feel it? How do you know it?
I'll tell you.
We're getting to what the listeners are probably going to want to know. This is good.
Yeah, who's asking whether you can see it or hear it? Whose question is that?
That was Jerry.
You use all of your senses. You use the five normal physical senses, and getting back to Lauren here, there is also a feeling about the site that is very important to picking up extra information about the site, and that is called the ambiance of it. You take 100 people and walk them one at a time into a cathedral. They will all feel the ambiance, and yet there's not a body part to stick it to. And what we've actually found is the psychic sense appears to be the seventh sense, not the sixth one. And ambiance seems to be the sixth one that sort of incorporates all of the other five senses. And this is going to be the value of Lauren's book, is that she's going to start teaching people how to get that overall thing which causes what most people call when you have the revelation, when you have the revelation experience. And so Lauren's book is going to be very valuable in this method. You use all of your senses. You get to a point, there's one point called bilocation, which is very rare, and I would imagine that Russ has seen more of this than anyone else, and that is...
Lynn, I have somebody in the chat room who was asking about biolocation.
Yeah, in biolocation, a lot of people think that if you are picking up things about the site, then you must be at the site, and so that's biolocation. It's not. The pure biolocation is where you cannot tell that you're not at the site. You see it, you feel the wind on your face, it's full 3D Technicolor and so on, and you cannot tell you're not there.
Best done with a viewer, with an interviewer working with a viewer, so that the interviewer can help guide the person along so they don't get lost or frightened.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And I've done that many times working with Hella Hammond on...
Yeah.
Tactical targets where we would have to go into some potentially scary place, and I'd psychically hold her hand as we were breaking in.
Yeah.
So Ingo, I want to ask you, I agree with what you said, and I want to know what you think of my comment. Our accuracy is outstanding, but our problem is reliability.
Oh, that's
so
true.
Well, that corresponds to your experience?
Yes. You know, your average score or your average accuracy is what everybody reports. Of course, some people report their highest accuracy and sort of ignore all those others. But, yeah, you have good sessions and bad sessions, and we're still trying to find out what causes you to have a good session and a bad session. Another problem with it is that you can be totally accurate. You can have a 100% accurate session, which is not applicable to what anybody needs. You know, you take the results back to a customer and they say, well, we already knew that. And so what? And so these are problems with remote viewing, that accuracy isn't the only thing. It's reliability. It's applicability. It has problems. And like I say, as long as you're using humans, it's not going to be perfect.
I would like to add something to this. And that reliability measure increases with training. It's very much like the Olympics. If you look at the people that are performing on the Olympics now, the reason they're there is not just because they can perform better than other people, but they can perform better more reliably. Now, it doesn't mean that's 100%. It doesn't mean that they don't sometimes fall off the balance beam. But on average, they do a really good job hanging in there with a much greater level of reliability than people who are just starting out.
So yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. That's the real advantage to the type of training that Lynn, Glenn, and others have been doing, this long, extensive training over many years.
Well,
one of my students in Washington State wrote to me, and I mean, he was just in a horrible state, you know, just complaining and everything. And he said, I cannot seem to get over 93% accurate. And I wrote back and I said, Gritch, I don't want to hear it, you know. You know, think of what you were doing a year ago. And, you know, well, don't gritch about it. Just enjoy it.
Yeah, every session is a combination of good data, bad data, and contamination. And every viewer has good days and bad days. And every viewer has cycles of contact, has times when they're hot as a pistol, when they're really good, and other times where they can't hit the side of a barn. The key is you need a way to handle the data to determine what's the good data and what is bad. I think that's one of the important things that Glenn has taught us, is an analytical method that was used by the military and the NSA to handle the data on a low-level data, on a low level. So, and that's real complicated. I don't want to get into that. The point I just wanted to make is that on a given day, I could be great, and on another day, I could be terrible.
We have a thing that we just preached to all of our students, and that is that the purpose of a practice target is not to get the target, to learn something about the target. The purpose of a practice target is to learn something about yourself.
I think that's well said, Lynn. And I have a comment that is, we did two almost perfect series in the stock market, which were judged by the market itself. So there's nobody has any quarrel about sensory leakage. And in both of those experiments, and I was a viewer in one of them, we spent a lot of time each trial debriefing any discordant elements among the viewers, the tasker, the people running the experiment. So we just had a little loving bubble, which takes some time to achieve. But in every trial, we were in complete agreement on what we're doing, why we're doing it, how it's going to be done, and then we go forward. And we found, at least in the experiments where I was the viewer with Jane, that made a huge difference, that allowed two straight-up scientists to do an almost perfect series into the stock market. But you can't. It's the idea that, in my opinion, you mustn't run viewers on trials. It's got to be exceptionally coherent, loving environment, so they're really open and willing to do this.
Sure, yeah.
We had a caller there. I don't know if they're still there or not. 559. You're on the air.
Okay, this is Jed Bendix up in Minnesota, and I had to rechange my question several times because as you guys progressed along, you answered it.
Is that a form of remote viewing, guys, when we hear this guy's been waiting on the phone, putting out vibes?
Yeah, I guess
that's psychic. That's not remote viewing. What's the difference?
Yeah, we knew he was going to say that. See?
Go ahead, caller. Minnesota.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's fine. Teresa Frisch is my instructor, and Lynn has been gracious enough to assist a small group of us with her, and much appreciative to that. Databasing, I was wondering if Lynn has been big into that, and Teresa, wondering how all groups could get into databasing and how a scientific community can also use that as an overall with an operational plan, if there's any ideas or thought processes between the groups sharing their databases for operational and scientific purposes.
We're hoping to put a public database for remote viewing. The problem is that the first rule, of course, of databasing is garbage in, garbage out, and that most people have no idea how to use a database, much less get information out of it. So we're fighting that problem, trying to figure out how to prevent that.
Does that answer your question, caller?
Well, I'm kind of curious as to, I know Lynn's keeping in Alaska, if the others, like the Hawaii Remote Viewing Guild and other groups, would consider combining theirs into a larger pool, separate but into a larger pool at the same time for operational and scientific purposes, where a unbiased third-party scientist could do tasking for scientific purposes, and yet at the same time operational groups could come in and for like law enforcement or medical and see which, which taskers or whatever, which groups would be best suited for their questions they're asking, their CRV, ERV, or whatever.
Yeah, Teresa is working a project on that too, to establish something like that.
Okay, any other comments?
I have a new question. It's about talent. Some people are better than remote viewers than others. It's a mistake to think that there's a democracy in psychic abilities.
Right.
Now, somebody talked about the balance beam last night, and I can run and swim, but I cannot do the balance beam whatsoever. So I was very interested in watching little Chinese balance beam athlete perfectly stick to the beam. Back and forth, she got a gold medal, and she did not have the slightest tremble, no balance checking. She was just glued to that beam, whereas there were other good people, there were silver people and bronze people, and people didn't get a medal, who were constantly checking their balance. But the Chinese girl did not have a balance problem. Reminded me of my large Siamese cat, who runs back and forth along a 6-foot fence along my house, and he has no problem about staying on the fence. I never saw him do a balance check. He just is glued to the fence the way the Chinese acrobat was. And I think that there may be some significant variation among remote viewers that we don't really take cognizance of, and we don't actually like to take cognizance of.
Well,
we don't like the idea that some people are A-plus remote viewers, and they're the people who get their work published in the books, and then the rest of us who are never going to do what Pat Price did, because he's a different genetic composition.